This episode is for anyone invested in the biotech industry or entrepreneurs seeking the pulse of innovation. One event stands out above the rest, and it is the Bio International Convention this year in Boston.
Crown jewel, of course, is Bio International Convention, which draws, you know, again, you know, 10, we could be upwards of 15,000 people this year. It's pretty amazing.
Taking place next week in Boston, it's the golden opportunity to be at the heart of biotech breakthroughs and policy discussions.
The networking opportunities at Bio and the opportunity to have fun and to really get to know one another and really get to hear what's going on in the industry is unparalleled.
Today, I am joined by Rich Masters, who is the Chief Public Affairs and Marketing Officer for the Biotechnology Innovation Organization, a seasoned veteran when it comes to these conventions.
I have two kind of core pieces of my portfolio. One is I manage the communications campaigns around our political events. That's my background. And then marketing for all of our premier events. So there's two kind of huge buckets.
We will discuss what to expect at the convention, the pivotal role of such gatherings in driving industry advancements, and rich insider tips for making the most of your attendance.
But why you stand up for science? We're going to have people cut their own videos at our Bio International Convention, at the Bio Pavilion. You can go and cut your own video. I'm here. I'm standing up for science, and this is why I'm standing up for science. It's so important that the industry speak with one voice, and only Bio, our organization, can do all of that.
We dive very, very deep into topics like the benefits of biotech.
We've got to recognize that. We've got to applaud it. We have to stand up for it and cheer it. All of the things that we see, whether it's hunger, whether it's the environment, or whether it's ending disease, biotechnology is at the center of all of that.
The important role of investments in biotech.
Already, most investors, when they invest, 9 out of every $10 that are invested in biomedical drug innovation, 9 in $10 fails. Mm. But that $1 that works, it comes up with mRNA, which saved the planet. Right. And so it's really an important ecosystem and we need to protect it.
And what is the purpose of the Biotechnology Innovation Organization that organizes every year several conferences like the Bio International in Boston next week?
We're mainly focused on Washington, although we do work very closely with our International Biotech Association that's based out of Brussels. And we work across the board. We work on international trade law and we work with our partners. So,
join us as we unpack the excitement of the upcoming Bio International Convention and the important work in communicating with policymakers, investors, and the industry. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button. And now let's roll with Rich. Rich, it's absolutely fabulous to see you again. How are you doing?
I'm doing so great, Christian. Thanks for having me back again. It was such a great experience last year. You know, having you in San Diego with us was a special treat and doing your podcast. It's an honor to be on your podcast. I mean, I've listened, and I'm telling you, the amount of detail and depth that you go in is what makes it popular and makes it a great success. So I couldn't be more thrilled to join you here today.
Thank you very much for joining, and thank you very much for this kind compliment. I totally accept it. And especially thank you very much, Rich, for putting together the Bio in the United States every year with your team. It's one of the best events in the industry. And when we spoke last year, about the same time in May, I thought when you explained to me what's going to happen in San Diego, that I thought, yeah, okay, I mean, communication expert in the United States, probably he's marketing the event very well and exaggerating. But then I saw the Bio in San Diego, and now I have the feeling that it was more or less an understatement that you made in our podcast episode. it was really one of the best conferences that I've ever seen in our industry in San Diego last year. And I'm curious to hear from your perspective, from the perspective of the organizer, how was it for you?
Christian, it was terrific. I think when we spoke, we were hoping we would be at around 10,000 people roughly that would show up, 8,000 to 10,000. We exceeded that last year and did well over 10,000. I think part of that has to do with we were promoting a premier event. I want to make a special shout out to our leaders in that. Tanya Fikes, who has been our event leader for many, many years. She puts on a premium show. She has just a team that is second to none, not just in this industry, but in any industry, really, in the United States and abroad. These conferences are so important for the industries that they represent. But I think we have, by far, without question, the best events team in the world. And I think the product of that is what you saw when you were in San Diego. It's what we're planning, for Boston. And guess what? Planning is already underway for San Diego 2024. That's why it's so good. And so our events and marketing team are literally the best on the planet. And you've been there. I don't think I'm overselling that. They are so good. And they make my job as a marketer and a promoter for the events very easy because they're so good.
I mean, San Diego is a lovely city. And my personal highlights were I think it was Monday morning, the run event in the morning. Did you participate?
I did participate. So I went a little early because we also had our board meeting that same day, and I realized that the race went off. And so what I did is I ran it before the race came off. I was coming fast as the race was starting, so I just must have missed you. But what a beautiful day to run, huh?
It was gorgeous. It was gorgeous, and especially the waterfront with all the nice boats. And also, you promoted the Midway experience. And what you didn't mention, I believe, in our podcast was the main act in this evening. I think it was Cool in the Gang, wasn't it? The band.
It was Cool in the Gang. And we've got some surprises this year. Specifically what they are. Trust me, there will be surprises, but it was Cool in the Gang. We didn't announce it because, you know, it's kind of a bio tradition to kind of have a closing night act that makes people go, what? I didn't know that. It's kind of like there's a word in Louisiana they call lagniap. It's a kind of a mixture of a French and French Canadian and Cajun kind of word. It's called lagniap, and it means a little something extra. So, our event promoters, our event organizers, they always have a little lagniap for our events. So you can expect some this year. But Cool in the Gang last year blew me away. I didn't even know about it until the day before.
Really?
Exactly. Yeah. Very good at keeping their secrets, but it makes for a really exciting event when you know there's a little lagniap in your future.
Yeah, this was I couldn't agree more. This was such a unexpected turn on the Midway. I mean, I was lining up with my colleagues, and then we went up. It was really beautiful, nice. We had some drinks and met a lot of nice people, which was very good after the shutdowns during the pandemic. And as I was about to go home, I was like, okay, I finished this evening. I had enough of partying, and I want to also enjoy the day after. The music started playing, and I just walked past the stage, and I thought, wait, what? I know this band. Is this really Cool in the Gang? And then you had one of the best concerts I ever saw.
It really was. And that was, we did it on the Midway, that battleship. Which is where that concert was, which was just breathtaking. And did you like the acrobats that jumped off the wall and then back up onto the wall?
Yeah.
That blew me away. It's crazy.
Yeah, this was fantastic to see. And then there was this, I don't know the name, there were these, I hope I get it right in English, there were these strings attached to the Midway and musicians who played with, what was this instrument called? Do you know the name of that?
I don't know the name of it. That's interesting. I'll have to go back and I'll text you.
I never saw that before. I mean, it was one act. I mean, Midway itself is worth a trip. And then you had these acrobats, nice crowd, and then Kool & the Gang and other musicians. Fantastic idea.
It was great. And by the way, this year, we have our closing ceremony. Our big event is going to be at Fenway Park, right? Which is one of the most, if not, people in Boston and all of New England would say it's the most historic ballpark, baseball park in America. It's where the Boston Red Sox play. We have a closing event at Fenway that we're extremely excited about. That, of course, I hope to see you there and anyone else who hasn't registered, still time to do it. But that's where our big closing event's going to be this year, Fenway Park.
Yeah, I watched my first baseball game live last year in San Diego. It was also an amazing experience. I'm curious now, Rich, you mentioned that you were not aware of Kool & the Gang and that your event team hid it from you. Can you explain a little bit your role at the Bio International organization? You're the chief marketing officer, if I remember it right. What is your job?
My job is chief marketing and public affairs officer. And I think we explained to you maybe last year, and I think you actually learned something, that bio isn't just the convention. I mean, the convention is kind of the crown jewel of the biotechnology innovation organization's events portfolio. But we have events throughout the year. We have one coming up for our agriculture and environment group called Bio Impact. We are going to be in Charlotte, North Carolina this year. That's going to be in September. Then we have another event that's called the Bio Investor Forum. That's going to be in San Francisco in October, in the fall timeframe. Right around the first of the year, we have another event. It's called Bio CEO. It's where CEOs gather. So we have a whole portfolio of these events. So for the events side, I am the chief marketer. And so we'll talk about these events and why we think biotech companies should be part of all of our events. I mean, they really are the seed, if you will, of how you begin and how you start a biotechnology foundation is our events. And we have a suite of premier events. And the crown jewel, of course, is Bio International Convention, which draws, we could be upwards of 15,000 people this year. It's pretty amazing. And so these smaller conferences are still as important. We'll draw hundreds or thousands to these smaller conferences, but they are just as important and they're part of our portfolio. So part of my portfolio is to market these premier events. The other part of my portfolio is public affairs. And what that means really is another aspect of bio that a lot of people don't understand is we have a unbelievable second to none government relations operation. In other words, we have got what you call lobbyists and federal government relations folks. And when there is bad public policy in Washington, D.C., we will go in and we'll fight on behalf of our members to make sure that these anti-science policies that we see all the time go forward. So I have two kind of core pieces of my portfolio. One is I manage the communications campaigns around our political events. That's my background. And then marketing for all of our premier events. So there's two kind of huge buckets of work that I oversee at Bio, just so people kind of understand. Because Bio is complex. It means many, many things to many folks.
Now, it's good to have you. I just had a stupid idea in my mind while you were speaking. I thought, do you have a red telephone to Mr. President, to the U.S. President, to just give him a ring and say, please change this policy. We need a better one.
Well, we certainly wish we did because, the current president and frankly the previous president passed some policies and advocated for policies which would really hurt innovation, would hurt our science and scientists. We work very hard. As a matter of fact, you can't see it here, but my office where I'm standing right now is three blocks from the White House. Out the conference room, you can actually see into the west wing of the of our White House. So we're situated right in downtown Washington, D.C. My background, as I said, it was as a television political reporter, but then I worked in the United States Senate for years. So we work directly with members of Congress and the Senate. We'll work with our international partners on bad international public policy. You know, Christian, the theme of this year's event, this year's bio event, is stand up for science. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, if you look across the globe, and that is in Europe, you see it in Germany, we see it in London, we see it in Brussels, we see it in the United States. There is emerging this group of anti-elite, anti-scientific, anti-science groups that are building up anti-vaccine. In the United States alone, vaccine hesitancy is on the upswing, which to me is amazing. I mean, vaccines essentially eliminated measles as a disease. We're now seeing it again. And it's coming from political leaders of both the left and the right who talk about, you know, science in negative ways. So the theme of this year's bio convention is stand up for science. We're going to gather, you know, 14, 15, maybe 16,000 people will be there. We want them to stand up and speak with a unified voice about bad public policy and why it's so important that we don't have that bad public policy, because it's going to squash drug innovation. It's going to kill the cures of the futures. Let me give you one quick example, Christian. Last year, the United States Congress passed a bill which would essentially price fix. So it would say you can't charge what you want to charge or what the market bears for this life-saving drug. Mm-hmm. We're going to impose a price on you. Just since that bill passed, and it hasn't even been implemented as yet, just since that bill has passed, 50 drugs in development have come off the shelves.
Oh, really?
Because they don't think the investors are like, you know, 9 in 10 drugs fail. I mean, it is really difficult. And anyone who has done a junior high school science project knows that science is about failure. Science is driven by failure. You know, only through failure can you come up with success. But who has to pay for that failure? The question is, do taxpayers pay for it? Do patients pay for it? Or do investors pay for it? And if investors are going to pay for it, they need to understand that they're going to get a return on their investment, right? Otherwise, they're going to stop. And what you're seeing here, Christian, in the United States, is because of bad public policy, investors are getting skittish. And they're saying, I don't know that I want to invest in this drug because the United States government could come in and fix the price so that I end up losing all of my investment. Already, most investors, when they invest, 9 out of every $10 that are invested in biomedical drug innovation, $9 in $10 fails. Mm. But that $1 that works, it comes up with mRNA, which saved the planet, right? And so it's really an important ecosystem, and we need to protect it. And science and scientists are not very good at organizing, pulling themselves together. And that's what Bio wants to do. We think that the collective power of the industry should be on display in Boston. And we certainly fully intend on doing that, signing people up for action and trying to get people to stand up for science. As a matter of fact, we're going to have a booth. And I would love for you to go by and do this. It would be great to have a celebrity come and do this. But why you stand up for science? We're going to have people cut their own videos at our Bio International Convention at the Bio Pavilion. You can go and cut your own video. I'm here. I'm standing up for science. And this is why I'm standing up for science. It's so important that the industry speak with one voice. And only Bio, our organization, can do all of that.
Yeah, when you fix the price, I couldn't agree more. When you fix the prices, I mean, the last numbers I have is that these days a novel drug costs about $3 to $4 billion. When I look at all the failures that we have to count in and all the processes, and this money has to redeem all the sunk costs in the development. If you don't let investors redeem their investment, then they stop investing in innovation, and then the innovation engine stops, and we don't get any new drugs on the market, and we can't fix the health problems.
You're right. And you know what? One of the things we're trying to explain to policymakers, because let's be honest, policymakers, politicians, they don't understand this complex ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we've used to explain this is, let's say we decide we are going to, there is a pristine piece of land in Berlin. It is up on a hill. No one's ever seen it, but it's been owned by a family trust for decades, for generations, right? No one has ever sold it. Well, all of a sudden, the family's patriarch dies, and the kids decide that they're going to sell this pristine piece of land. So what happens is it goes for hundreds of millions of dollars. Well, let's say you and I are investors. We decide, okay, we're going to put a bunch of money into this beautiful piece of property, and we're going to turn it into condos that we're going to rent out. So we invest all of our money, and then we invest in changing it all around. And then the German government would come in and say, by the way, we have a housing shortage in Berlin. The most you can charge for this is about, you know, $500 a month. Yeah. Right? And we would have lost all of our money. And that's what investors have to go through every day. And so we're trying to put it in language so that every Joe understands if you price fix these drugs, you are going to stop the cures of the future. We can't do it. So why we need to stand up for science. And that's what we're going to be doing in Boston in June.
That's very good to hear. Let's not step into the European politics because you're not far from the truth with your example.
I know.
I mean, we could have, I have some time. I mean, if you have more time, or should we just stay with bio and for this podcast episode? Let's, one question to you. You mentioned bio in Boston, that you start preparing the bio in San Diego already. Tell me a little bit more. What is the hard work of your team in the background so that the attendees understand how much passion and effort runs into this event? What is your team doing in preparing these bios?
So we have, you know, there's a lot of logistics that go into this. So you were there last year and you saw the floor filled with exhibits from people who, you know, you want to do business within the biotechnology space. Boston, when we left San Diego last year, 85% of the space in Boston was already sold. We're already selling space for San Diego 2024 already. So we have to map that out. We start mapping that out. We start planning who the speakers are going to be. We start planning who, you know, what some of these sessions are going to be like. We have to start lining up sponsors. You know, Bio International Convention is not inexpensive to produce. It is a big, massive show. And we rely on all of our big sponsors and, you know, partners. And we have a lot of terrific sponsors that are alongside the ride with us. And so we'll be working on those sponsors because it's an expensive endeavor. We want them to be our partners. And we want to make sure we recognize their contributions.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
You love listening to podcasts, but have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? Maybe you want to build a brand, grow your business, or are looking for an excuse to talk about your favorite hobby. Whatever your reason for making a podcast, Buzzsprout is the place to start. Since 2009, Buzzsprout has helped over 300,000 people launch their own podcasts. Buzzsprout walks you step by step through the whole process and will give you powerful tools to start, grow, and monetize your podcast. Ready to get started? Click the link in the show notes to get our free step-by-step guide to starting your podcast today.
I'm curious for, you mentioned the main theme of this year's bio is Stand Up for Science. And it's now 1 year after San Diego. Which topics do you see in the biotech industry, in the preparation of the bio, that will change our future? What's coming in science?
Well, you're going to see some sessions on this price control, this what I call price fixing, this arbitrary government control of that. So I believe you're going to have, we have a number of sessions that are lined up where people are going to talk about that, how it's going to be implemented. Is there anything we can do to change it? If so, what are the challenges of that? So you'll see us talk about this drug pricing situation. One of the things that is the biggest drivers of the drug pricing issue is the fact that in the United States, we have a group that negotiates these prices called pharmacy benefit managers, PBMs, and they are essentially the ones that set the prices. They come in and negotiate these, and they do it in the dark of night. They're not scientists. They don't. They're not doing anything, and they're certainly not sharing the cost benefits with patients. So we'd like to see PBMs reform. So we're going to be talking a little bit about that. The other thing I think that you're going to hear a lot about at BioConvention from a policy aspect is intellectual property. So bio is made up, Christian, of 900 to 1,000, roughly, companies. Of those 900 to 1,000 companies,
May I stop you for a second? Did I understand you right? 900 to 1,000 companies.
Yes, between 900 and 1,000 companies are bio members.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And it is, and the vast majority of them, Christian, they don't even have a product yet. They hope to, all of them hope to get a product, but none of them have a product. And nine in 10 of them will fail, like I said, because, you know, their hypothesis is going to fail. And there's only way to know how to do that, and that's to test it through experimentation and starting a company and doing that. We have 900 to 1,000. The only thing they own, they don't own anything except intellectual property. Mm. All across the globe right now, there is attacks from socialist-minded groups against our intellectual property. You saw it happen just last year. You saw that there was what they called the TRIPS waiver, which in the United States was that the intellectual property for mRNA and the production of, you know, the vaccines, the Pfizer vaccine, the Moderna vaccine, all the that intellectual property that was developed in a lab that was paid for by private investors for the most part should just be given away free. Just going to be put out into the marketplace because they said that was what was stopping people. It was actually vaccine hesitancy that was stopping many of these countries. But that was the tip of the iceberg. All across the world, you're seeing laws pop up to basically steal intellectual property. So in the United States, for instance, we have a lot of political leaders that will say, well, the basic science behind mRNA came from an NIH grant. Right. Or a government funded kind of beginning of the study. That is true. Right. The very basics of that. But it took hundreds of tries and failures to turn that into a vaccine. Matter of fact, Moderna had actually tried to do something for the SARS vaccine. It had not worked. And the mRNA technology they were using kind of had gone dormant. But they had invested tens of millions of dollars in it. And then when COVID happened, they remember that, pulled it off the shelf, and were able to rework that. And it actually worked this time around. And so what happens is that little bitty amount of government funding, now you have political leaders say, well, taxpayers already paid for it. Why do companies get to, profit from it? The truth is the companies profit from it because they're the ones that brought it to market. We don't expect the United States taxpayers or any taxpayers for that matter to pay that burden. We have it differently in the United States. And so intellectual property, you're going to hear a lot about intellectual property and protecting intellectual property and probably accelerated approval in the United States. Accelerated approval of drugs in the United States came into fruition during the HIV crisis when there was a real need to expedite and get experimental drugs out there to stop the AIDS crisis from moving. And so they came up with an accelerated approval model. Well, you're seeing that being used more and more, but you're in the United States also seeing people say, don't do that. We need to stick to the process. It's easy to say if you're not a patient waiting for a drug. Right. And so accelerated approval is under attack as well. And so from those aspects, you're going to see a lot of that. Some other things you're going to see, Christian, is capital formation. Right. It is tough to raise money to do anything these days. It used to be, you know, a few years ago, it was free money everywhere for investment and for growing. That's not the case anymore. And for biotechnology, it can be even more difficult because it's so risky. So it stands to reason that if anyone's looked at their retirement portfolios, they see that it's tough to raise money and that the markets are bad. We're going through a bad economic time. But if the rest of the world has a cold, biotechnology can get pneumonia because it's ridiculous, because it's so risky. And so we're going to hear a lot about how to raise capital. How do we raise capital? How can we change that dynamic? So there'll be a lot of discussions about that. So, that and a lot of some of the new cutting edge scientific and gene technologies will all be discussed. We have over 150 sessions, 150 sessions. Mm. Pretty amazing. including our keynote speaker, Katie Couric, former host of the Today Show and kind of an international celebrity, will be addressing the crowd with our CEO, Rachel King, on Wednesday convention.
Now, it's good that you voiced these problems. Thanks for pointing that out. I think we're on the same page on that. In the last years, I was very impressed by the scientists in the pharma industry. I thought it is not possible to bring a vaccine within 1 year to the market and distribute it to patients. And I was really surprised when I heard then the pushback from politicians on the patent side. I think the core discussion was, how can we make sure that the vaccines are distributed globally? And they tried to basically, as you said, give away the vaccines for free. And I thought, this is not a real problem here. I mean, BioNTech, Moderna, Pfizer, it's in their interest to negotiate deals, basically. The real problem that we have is the distribution and the logistics and the production and the knowledge transfer, which is not easy in that area. And it's good to hear that you have it on your agenda to shape the picture in the politician's eyes. Do you also talk with Brussels, or are you more focused on Washington?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
We're mainly focused on Washington, although we do work very closely with our International Biotech Association that's based out of Brussels. And we work across the board. We work on international trade law and we work with our partners. So while we're bio doesn't specifically have that, we have a lot of international partners. We have an entire international division, which spends a lot of its time in Europe working on that waiver, the TRIPS waiver, and working on international with other international groups. We work hand in glove with them, and we're there to help them every step of the way as you do it. So we do have spent our international experts spend some time in Brussels, and their biggest fear is intellectual property, because everywhere across the globe right now, it seems as if everyone is trying to poach internet, intellectual property. And again, for our companies, they don't own anything else. The intellectual property is all they've got. Yeah. And if a company and if a country can just step in and seize that, march in and grab that intellectual property, well, then all of the science, all of the money, all of the time spent developing that cure, that that medicine is over with. And so as an industry, we have to speak solidly with one voice. And again, that's why we're doing Stand Up for Science, because right now science is at a critical juncture and scientists need to speak out, stand up and stand up for the industry.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think we have the same problems here in Europe like you have in the United States. I think you mentioned the NIH grants. We also have granting schemes here in Europe. And when I look at the entire value chain that is needed to bring one product to the market, I think basic research is 1% of the effort and the expenses, 99%, and most of it is basically in clinical trials. And when those investors don't get the asset protected, they just don't invest. Doesn't make any sense.
They don't, Christian. You couldn't be more right. And let me ask you, especially European audience, at the turn of last century, at the end of the 1990s, European drug developers really led the world. Europe, really, most of the drug
discoveries
were coming out of Europe. And then price controls came in. And when price controls came in, all the capital moved to the United States. And that's why the vast majority of cures and medicines are coming out of the United States right now. Well, if the United States follows suit with Europe, where does that money go? You see, China continues to increase. And so the question is when the next pandemic comes, do we want one country, China, to have all of the eggs in their basket? Or do we want to make sure that the West has a viable kind of drug development market. And so that's why these questions are really, really critical.
Strategically, it would make sense. I was not aware. I mean, you voiced it very clearly that Europe won one day in the past, it's long gone, was leading the industry. And now this is why bio is so important. And let's come to the partnering part, maybe. Bio is so important for European biotechs because we have a lack of capital here in Europe. And maybe we remind our audience or the audience of the podcast about the bio one-on-one partnering system that they can use to reach out to investors. Because very often I'm really surprised when people, when I talked about bio with people here in Europe, and I say, yeah, you can partner with investors there. And I say, how? I mean, there are 15,000 people or 10,000 people there. How should I meet them? Can you explain a little bit what the bio one-to-one partnering business, partnering system is?
I absolutely can. And thank you for asking me this question. The bio one-on-one partnering system is unbelievably unique. This year alone, right now, today, 3 weeks before we even go, 45,000 meetings. 45,000 meetings are already on the books for our partnering system. That doesn't mean we're all full. So please, come on. So let me tell you about the partnering system. It is, to me, it was one of the things when I joined bio a few years ago, I didn't realize it existed. And this is like where when people ask me, tell me about bio. And I said, the bio is really, if you're in biotechnology, bio, the organization, serves you from the beginning, from your very first kernel of an idea till when you sell your very successful company 10, 20 years down the road. So let's say you and I, Christian, come up with Rich Christian drug development. You guys, we're buddies in college, right? And so we're in college and we're buddies and we're science majors and we come up with a drug discovery. But we're idiot college students. We have no idea how to turn that into an idea. So I go to Bio International Convention. I sign up for bio one-on-one partnering. And so what bio one-on-one partnering does is you and I go in and there is a line of investors that we can pitch, that we can walk through our idea, talk about our science, pressure test each of those. And then if we've got a really good idea, you have those meetings together, you have five or six of them. If our idea is really good and it's really well thought out, we pitch it really well, then they'll be bidding against each other to give us money to build, right? So now we know that. So let's say you, again, let's just take this fictitious, you know, Christian Rich company, and we now have our investors because we went to bio partnering, went to bio convention, we got to meet some other people. So now we've got our money, now we got our capital. So you and I want to build a business. So we now have to get a lab, we have to get lab equipment, we have to do all of that stuff. Guess what? Bio has what's called bio business solutions. Bio business solutions allows you and me to go in and be able to, instead of paying $100,000 for, you know, a mass quantity of test tubes and pipettes and things you need to stand up a laboratory, we can get it for a fraction of the price because we're bio members. Bio members can use bio business solution to get great deals on the things we need. So that gives us large company purchasing mm-hmm. power. Because again, we may only need five lab coats, not like Pfizer or Merck that need 500,000. But if we are a bio member, we get the purchasing power of a huge company because we pool it together with our small investors. So that helps us save money. That helps us put that, remember that money we got from the partnering system? That money now can be spent more in the lab because we're having to pay less to run the lab, right? So now we get to phase two or phase three clinical trials and everything is going well. But now we need to figure out how to talk to the FDA. We need to talk about the regulatory bodies in Europe. How do you do that? Guess who knows how to do that? Bio. Bio can talk to the regulatory groups. We can talk to those folks. We can make those introductions at the FDA in the United States. So now we've got an approved drug. But now the government wants to come in and impose price controls. Or the government wants to take your intellectual property and just give it away. Guess what? Bio's public affairs arm can help get through all of that crisis. And then 20 years down the line, when we want to sell, you know, because you and I have got another great idea that we want to start, but we don't want to manufacture. We don't want to be a big drug company. We want to go back into the lab. Guess what? Bio can help move into another place where we can sell our technology so you and I can go back to the lab and start figuring out the next thing. So at every stage of a career, of a development of a drug, bio's there to help.
That's good to know. That's good to know. I think every European biotech company must become a member of bio at the end of the day to get your help on the US market. US market is the most important market also for European biotechs. And it's good to know that they should go to you directly.
We have many, 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 many hundreds of European biotech companies. We would love more.
I'm sure you get more. Last year, we talked about hybrid formats, hybrid conference formats. We had some years of online conferences. And before 2020, basically every conference was in real life only, no hybrid format. I'm curious to hear from you, from the organizer of Bio in Boston this year. What will stay from the pandemic? Last year, you mentioned that you had you started the Bio podcast series, the Bio news platform, and that you also have some hybrid formats in place. Will this stay in future, or are we completely going back to the formats of before 2020?
No, you put your finger right on it. We've built this news, kind of what I call a ecosystem of news that talks about what we're doing. So one of the things we learned from the pandemic, I mean, it was difficult, right? Physically, it was difficult. When you have 15,000 people show up in person, it has a big economic impact. So from an economic standpoint, having virtual conferences was difficult. But we kept them going. We thought it was important to keep them going. So we had the virtual conferences. What we took away from that was the ability to use the sessions that we have to kind of create a library of sorts of news stories and so of content so that for folks who physically can't be there, who plan to be there, they'll be able to watch a lot of the content that we have. They miss out on the look and the feel and the networking and the one-on-one partnering. They miss out on that piece of it, which is why we encourage everybody to go. But the content there is so rich. And it is, you know, so important that people be plugged into that, that I think it's extremely important that we continue to do that. So we'll have, Good Day Bio Live, which you'll be able to actually tune in, even if you're not there, and see a recap of all the events that have occurred that day, sound bites. It'll be a really nice video montage of things that are going through throughout the day. As you mentioned, we do have the Bio podcast. It's called I Am Bio Podcast. If you haven't downloaded it, I urge everybody to go back and listen. We have some unbelievable, we just finished or we're wrapping up our spring-summer session. But we've talked about AI. We have talked about, really across the board, so many topics of interest. We talked a little bit about a report. So Bio did a report about the fact that in the pharma world, investments in pain medication have gone almost extinct. We have an entire podcast that is behind that. We have another one on rare disease, in which John Crowley, who's our vice chairman, tells his very moving story about how he was able to have, he had two young children who had genetic diseases. He gave up his career and moved into drug development. It was so inspiring that there was a movie with Harrison Ford and Brendan Fraser many years ago that featured John. And so our podcast features that. What we've tried to do at the podcast is make sure that we make the science that our scientists are working on relevant to human life. So there's the I Am Bio podcast. We will be doing that, at convention. And as I said, there will also be a video element to this where people can come and talk about how they stand up for science. And then we can use that to elevate people's voice. So we learned a lot of lessons during virtual. Don't want to go back to pure virtual ever again. but we are taking the best piece of virtual and trying to, learn from that and make the conventions better and more importantly, last longer. I think the content that we get will be able, if you look at our content channels, we have a daily newsletter that takes you 3 minutes every morning to read. Mm-hmm. It's focused a lot on policy issues and how you can make your voice heard. a lot of U.S. policy, but we also have international news events as well that are in this. You can go to bio.news, which is a new website that we launched at convention last year. It's a news portal, and it has all of the news of the day that you need to know. And it'll also have you prompt you to sign up for bio or for Good Day Bio, which is a daily newsletter. Throughout convention, Good Day Bio will be focused on all the great things that are going on. So we took a lot of what we learned from that virtual session. We put it into the real world. We'll continue to do that. But let's hope we never go back to virtual only conventions again.
I'm with you. Please, no virtual world anymore. I want the real life. But what you mentioned, I mean, with the video option, for example, it's all great ideas, and we are a little bit restricted by time. So otherwise, we sit here 8 hours and talking about everything. But what I love with the change with the conferences is the video option. It was so often at conferences. I mean, usually when I attend and use partnering systems, I have about 8 to 10 hours of meetings every day. And we have still a lot of business cards from the pre-pandemic times here. So this is staples of people I met. And because it's really beneficial, as you said, you can reach out to the pharma industry, to investors, to service partners. They're all there. And there are a lot of solutions. But there were also interesting panel discussions. And the problem always was that I had to decide either I go to a one-on-one meeting or I attend a panel discussion. And very often the one-on-one meetings won. And they always thought it's such a pity that before the pandemic, almost no conferences recorded this panel discussion and put it online, because it really helps, for example, with regulators or with politicians to send them the content and say, look, I mean, listen to that. Will this stay also at Bio in the future forever, that the content is accessible, that you can use the content for negotiating with politicians?
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The Coaching Conversation 2024. This podcast is 100% dedicated to leadership and leadership within the workplace coaching area. We work with companies throughout the world teaching leaders how to coach their employees. This podcast is dedicated to teaching specific strategies, frameworks, coaching models, and now artificial intelligent strategies to help leaders drive greater teamwork, collaboration, cooperation, greater attitudes, better motivation, coaching career development, just to name a few. I hope you'll check out our podcast.
Yes. I mean, that's the idea. We want to sure, and we will be grabbing as much of this content as we can. You know, the Good Day Bio daily newsletter goes out to more than 40,000 people worldwide. And I would love anybody who's listening to this to go to bio.news and sign up for our daily newsletter. But of those 40,000, we have roughly 10,000 people in Washington, D.C. who listen to it. They're policymakers. They're congressmen. They are people's staff. And we're going to take these stories, the stand up for science stories, and we're going to make sure Capitol Hill, we're going to march it straight up the hill to make sure that they hear that this industry speaks with one voice. We cannot continue to stifle innovation in science and then expect that we're going to come up with the next generation of cures. And, you know, when you look at the next generation of science that's being working, it's not just treating symptoms. We are eliminating whole classes of diseases by changing the genetic makeup. This gene therapy and the genetic research that's going on right now are going to end disease. It's going to cost a lot of money to be able to do that. But guess what? It's going to eliminate and save taxpayers and insurance companies and save businesses. Productivity is going to increase. If the whole classes of diseases are eliminated, just think of the economic impact that that's going to have. That won't happen with bad public policy. That won't happen if investors think that the government's going to come in and steal that gene therapy from a company that spent billions of dollars developing. It's not going to happen. And we need to speak with one loud, clear voice to our political leaders, whether they're in Berlin, Brussels, or Washington, D.C. We need to speak with a clear voice on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, other countries do the research and then we can negotiate with them. So we need to keep science here in Europe and the United States alive and working. And this is very important. I think the complex problems that we have these days, science is the solution for that.
It is. I mean, if you look across the board, Christian, we're talking about hunger. What are we going to do about hunger? Well, guess what? Biotechnology is the solution for eliminating food security. I mean, you're developing heat-resistant cattle that can live in drought conditions, right, that never before existed. So poorer countries will be able to raise cattle because of the science that's going on and provide a stable food source to countries that heretofore could never even dream of having herds of cattle. That'll happen. Or, you know, other types of agriculture, right? And biotechnology is going to be the solution for that. You know, we're trying to change from, you know, fossil fuels to a green source. There has to be a huge bridge. Biotechnology is producing that bridge, you know, and we've got to recognize that. We've got to applaud it. We have to stand up for it and cheer it. All of the things that we see, whether it's hunger, whether it's the environment, or whether it's ending disease, biotechnology is at the center of all of that. And as a result, we need to make sure we're doing policy that is going to shut down all of this innovation. We need to encourage it. It's a revolution because the science is, we're not going to keep it all in a bottle. But if it's not Europe doing it and it's not the United States doing it, it could be other actors that we don't want to negotiate with when it comes to ending these types of issues that face our societies.
Science and IP is strategically, I think, one of the most or two of the most important resources that we have these days. Rich, let me ask you some questions to the organization of the bio, especially measuring success. I have a finance background, and with a finance background, there's always then the question, how do we measure if a bio and the work of your organization is really successful? How do you do that? How do you measure your success?
You know, it's very difficult because when you are from the public policy angle, when you're pushing a boulder up the hill, and right now political leaders on both the left and the right both find political advantage to attacking the industry, it's very difficult to change that narrative. It's really difficult. You would think that a global pandemic in which our industry saved the planet would change people's attitudes. But you see political leaders, both in Europe and in the United States, continually attack an industry as greedy and corrupt. So that's been difficult. But what we've decided we're doing is, as we build this news, kind of this news ecosystem at bio.news and this, as we grow that audience, we're going to see that. So one measurement of success is, you know, a year ago when we were talking, Good Day Bio had roughly 20, 25,000 people. We now have 40,000 and it's continuing to grow. We hope to grow it, you know, significantly even more as it goes forward. We have to look at the policy that is passed. And right now it's an incremental deal. The original discussions about this drug price bill in the United States that happened would have decimated the industry. They were talking about foreign reference pricing. They were talking about, importation from other countries. There was a list of everything that would have just helped to destroy the industry out there was in one single bill. We fought hard against that as bio. We worked hard against that. And in the end, while we got price controls, it was limited in scope and it was much more limited. And we still are able to probably try to be able to get some softer language as it goes through the process. We're hoping we can do that. But the return on the investment there is we took a bill that would have destroyed the industry and made it still a bad bill. So how do you measure success on that? It's difficult. Now, in terms of bioconvention, that's a whole lot easier to measure success. You know, we're going to break records likely this year in terms of turning people out. We have put together a very aggressive marketing campaign. You've probably seen it. You know, we before, I think we had really focused on just kind of one-to-one communications and email marketing. We now use email marketing, but we're also supplementing that both here and with a greater emphasis even on Europe and in Asia, because we're going to have 65 countries represented. 40% of everybody that's going to be at Bio is not from the United States. So that tells you that we're growing and that our marketing efforts are really working. We're focusing on what we call a surround sound strategy, so that you're getting an email from us every once in a while. You're seeing us, you're seeing ads for BioConvention. When you Google biotechnology, you're seeing paid advertisement come up for, the best and the best. How can I raise money to fund my scientific idea? Guess what? Bio one-on-one partnering is going to come up. So we have invested more than ever before in trying to get the word out this time. From a marketing standpoint, we're doing everything we can to really kind of elevate the issue. And we're seeing it. Last year, we surprised everyone by, we're predicting 8,000. We ended up with 12,000, I think, last year or more. We're going to be at 15,000 at BioConvention this year. Could be more than that. When you get to downtown Boston, Christian, you're going to see ads all over Kendall Square. We are really, it's the first time ever we've done that, but we really want to get people who are in Boston and the last minute say, I think I should go over there and see what's going on with Bio. So that's something you're going to see. So from the event perspective, it's far easier to measure success.
That's true.
And we're doing really well. The public affairs piece, it's challenging. And this is why we want to do Stand Up for Science at this year's convention, because we're not going to be able to be successful pushing back bad legislation on our own. We need everybody to be part of it.
Yeah, public affairs work is so important, although it's hard to measure when it's successful, because people pay membership fees and then policies are passed that are harming the industry. And then the question comes up, why do we pay membership fees? But the thing is, if nobody is lobbying with the politicians, they just have a blind eye, they have a blind spot, they don't see the industry and they don't see the problems, and they put different regulations in place. It's just a matter of fact.
Yeah, you're 100% right.
Did I hear it right? The event part, it's 15,000 attendees from 65 countries with 40% non-US participants.
That's correct. It's good. The breakdown is roughly 60% US, 40% international. We have 65 different countries. Last year, South Korea had the largest international contingent. They're doing very, very well this year in terms of registration. But we also are seeing increased interest from the Middle East, which is also trying to develop a burgeoning biotechnology sector. So the Middle East is getting more and more involved. We see a huge contingent from Europe. So yeah, we have 65 different countries will be represented, and 40% of all the attendees will be non-US attendees. So it is truly an international convention. There's nothing like it. The truth is, there's a lot of different conferences that go on. There's a lot of imitators out there that try to imitate what we do. But you can't imitate our, unbelievable Bio one-on-one partnering. You know that firsthand. And you can't imitate Bio International Convention or Bio Impact for our ag and environment companies, or the Bio Investor Forum at San Francisco in the fall, or CEO. All of our events are premier events, and people can pretend that they're there, but we are the real deal. And so fortunately for us, we have got a great advantage, and we are really excited about our entire portfolio of events that we have coming in the next year.
Yeah, that's interesting to hear also from you regarding the Middle East. I had some speakers who have set up their offices in United Arab Emirates, and I still have the picture from the 80s, 90s, 2000s, where I thought, okay, oil producing companies, Middle East is very important. But when it comes to science, innovation, pharma industry, it's more United States, Europe, with the emerging markets in India and China. And I learned there is a lot going on in the Middle East lately and that there is a whole new ecosystem established. How much percentage from the Middle East will be attendees at the bio?
I don't know the exact breakdown, but you put your finger right on it. I mean, you've seen it growing. And we're year over year, we're seeing the interest growing. I think if you look at the region, and if you look at, you know, whether it's, you know, the UAE, you know, whether it's, you know, any of these countries in the Middle East, you know, I think for so long, their leadership depended on fossil fuel and depended on, you know, petrochemicals as a way to drive their economy. I think as they as global warming shifts from being hoax to, oh, this is real, we need to change. I think you see even leaders in the Middle East saying we need to diversify our economy. We need to ensure, I mean, even if you look at the education system in some of these Middle Eastern countries, there was never really a premium placed on, you know, STEM education. Within the last 10 years, you've seen many of the more westernized style countries in the Middle East start to do that. So as you're building this workforce, you need to find work for them to do, or they're going to go to Europe and you want to keep them home. So my sense is that from the Middle East, it's going to continue to grow. They're a smaller percentage than some of the Asian countries and obviously Europe right now. But they're growing. And I think my prediction is in the next 10 years, you're going to see them grow exponentially. Again, as more and more folks have education in that area, they're going to try to do it. And they have the capital to do it. I mean, there's no doubt that there is a massive amounts of capital throughout the Middle East. And what they want to do with it, I think, is going to be intriguing. And I think bio will continue to be kind of a center of that. But I predict it'll start to grow, and it'd be interesting to hear your take to see if you agree.
Absolutely. I mean, in my small ecosystem, it's yours. Your perspective is with your huge team is much bigger than mine. But what I saw is two topics basically. It's longevity and climate change. So that investments heavily in this area in the UAE is happening right now, and this is something that I was not aware of 10 years ago. It changed completely. You mentioned that you have a lot of nations, a lot of countries, a lot of sponsors, a lot of speakers, media attendees. And I always say when I talk with three people and wants to hear their opinion, I get four or five opinions back. I can imagine when you have 15,000 attendees, they all have their different needs and wishes and wants. How do you balance that? How do you do that?
It's the most difficult. It's probably the most difficult aspect of what the team does. And I think actually it's what separates bio from other kind of conventions. Our events team is, again, I've said this before, I believe it's second to none. They anticipate that what makes them special is our events team and education team has been through this so often. They understand what those needs are going to be and where the shortcomings are going to be before they happen. And, you know, one of the things, they predict issues, they predict problems, and they troubleshoot them before they ever happen. That doesn't mean they don't happen. Sometimes you got to wait in line for lunch and everybody's upset about that. That you can't change that. Everybody goes to line. When 14,000 people go to lunch at the same time, it's hard to have 14,000 box lunches quickly.
Yeah.
There's nothing you can do about that. But I got to tell you, it keeps our events leadership sleepless, trying to figure out ways in which to do it. So what makes them so good is their experience being on the ground for so many years. They will predict problems that, you know, perhaps I look at and think, of course, it's just put the box lunches out, let people go kind of grab them. They're like, no, because they've done it for so many years. So again, I think it's one of our strengths because our team has been through it so often. They know how to troubleshoot problems before they begin. That doesn't mean we're not going to have problems. Everybody does. This year, for instance, because of, you know, increased threats, everybody's going to have to go through magnetometers. If you leave the building, You have to go through a magnetometer. Even if you go out and have a smoke, you're going to have to go back through the metal detectors, again, which is going to cause problems because it's just, you know, it's going to cause slow entry back in and out of the conference center. But the safety and security of our attendees is the most important thing. And so that bit of inconvenience, so we're trying to telegraph that to people. Make sure you build that into your travel time because you don't know how long it's going to take you to get through the magnetometer metal detectors that are there. But I can assure you our team has already thought about it and is trying to get the word out that you may be delayed. So make sure you fold that in so that we don't, you know, so that everybody comes away with a really, really good experience. And there's nothing you can do about standing in line waiting to get into a session. But I think one of the things that they think of everything is I never even realized it. If you have a line waiting to get in, sometimes people get there very early. For Katie Couric, who's going to be our keynote speaker on Wednesday, there'll be a line out the door a half hour before. Our crew is out there. They're making sure that everybody's okay. They're, you know, checking out everybody's welfare, making sure everybody's fine before they get to go into the conference center to hear Katie Couric be interviewed by our CEO, Rachel King. But because they've thought ahead, it eliminates a lot of those problems. And that's why I continue to say they're the best group, world that pulls off these conferences.
I believe that a lot of work goes into it. You mentioned some speakers, and I mean, in the last years, we talked a lot about inclusive and diverse speakers, not only in gender and ethnicities, but when we talk about science, there are a lot of different scientific innovations going on at the same time. And although bio is a huge event, I think also your speaker slots are limited. So you have just a certain number of speakers that you can invite. How do you select the topics and the speaker? What is your process at bio?
Well, it's interesting. So late last year, we put out a call for sessions. So if you're a bio member, we put out a call for sessions. So people can send in all of their great ideas. And this year we got hundreds of suggestions. We then have a subset of a group of our members that meet together and they go through each of the submissions and they look through each of the submissions and they're all they all have to fill out the same things. What's the topic? Who would the panelists be? How do you do that? And then so we have a bespoke panel of our member companies come in and they'll look through that and they'll say yes to this one. This one looks good, but it's not diverse enough. No to that one. And so that's why I say this process starts many, 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 many months ago. And so we may start off with 500 submissions of what a great session would be. And we're going to end up with 150, which is a lot. But they will have all been vetted by a very diverse team. And what we do is they try to figure out which ones are going to be different, right? Because there's so many topics that are kind of the same. But we want to make sure that if we're going to do something on intellectual property and intellectual property theft, we have one on policy. We have one on malign actors stealing intellectual property. There's different areas of intellectual property, not just kind of the same old, same old. We want to make sure that there's a diversity of topics. And then, of course, we have had a rule now for a while, and it's important that every panel is diverse. You're not going to see a panel at bio in which, four, people who look exactly the same are talking about the issue. We were going to have diverse panels because we think diversity of viewpoints, especially when it comes to science, is critical. And not to mention the fact from a PR and marketing standpoint, when you see the diversity of our industry, women and men, women of color, men of color. When you see that, you realize how advanced the industry is. And also, we've got a lot of work to do. So I think, for me, that's why we want to really focus on both having interesting panels that are going to draw people to sit in on the panels, but also it's really important to have a diverse set of viewpoints so that it's not just the same old, same old. It's very important for us to be able to do that.
I agree more. I mean, innovation needs a diversity of opinions. not the same opinion. I mean, pros and contras, different social backgrounds, different nationalities, different genders. And out of these diverse discussions, new innovation appears sometimes, somewhere, and you can't really plan that. Rich, you're such a fantastic storyteller, and I would love to talk to you another hour or 2 hours or 3 hours, but I know you have a lot of things on your agenda. I have one final question left. And before I ask this final question, I would like to ask you, did I miss anything? Is there a question that you want me to ask you?
How much fun can people have at Bio? That's the one question we've missed.
That's so, how much fun can people have at Bio?
Listen, I tell you what, this will be my fourth Bio, and I'm telling you, every year I find something different. So the networking opportunities, I'll tell you this, right? One-on-one partnering, there is nothing on the planet that is better at taking investors and introducing them to inventors. Nothing better than one-on-one partnering. However, you can sit and you can make a pitch, but if you see someone at a happy hour, run into them at a Fenway Park, then all of a sudden you take that friendship to a new level, take that business to a new level. The networking opportunities at Bio and the opportunity to have fun and to really get to know one another and really get to hear what's going on in the industry is unparalleled. It's not only fun and interesting, you're seeing faces of scientists and businesses from all over the world. It's like doing an entire world tour of the biotechnology industry all at one place. It's fun. It's educational. The networking opportunities are unbelievable. We have a list of all of the networking receptions. We have them. We're going to have them on the floor. So if you go onto the floor, each of the areas are going to be having their own happy hours and get together sessions. You know, we're going to have, the place at Bio Pavilion where people can come, kick their shoes off, relax a little bit if they need to. There's places to do all of this stuff, but it's not all business. I mean, while it is business, there's a lot of fun. And by the way, some of the drugs that are saving lives today started with a conversation at a networking happy hour. There's no better place to be. If you're in the industry and you want to have fun and you want to meet everybody and you want to really make a difference and you want to stand up for science while you're at it, you got to be in Boston first week in June.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. It's really fun. Like last year in San Diego, especially your event was also at the baseball stadium. Was
yes. Great.
Yeah, I loved it. Let me ask you my final question now. We had this secret event, Cool and the Gang, last year. So let's share a secret on this podcast. What is this year's secret event?
Ask me why they don't tell me. This is why they don't tell me.
I was hoping to get it out of you at the end. So we have to come to Boston and experience it ourselves.
All I can tell you is I promise it'll be worth it.
Super. Absolutely. Rich, it is fantastic talking to you. I'm looking forward to see you in Boston this year. And all the best to you and your team in the preparation in the final mile to the event. And I'm pretty sure it will be as amazing or even more amazing this year, like it was last year.
Great, Christian. Thank you so much. And look forward to seeing you and anybody else. Registration's still open. Go to bio.org. Go to our events page. Sign up. We want to see you there. You won't regret it, I promise.
Rich, thank you for the conversation. Have a great day. Bye.
Bye-bye.
That brings me to the end of this insightful conversation with Rich Masters from the Biotechnology Innovation Organization. To me, it's clear that the Bio International Convention is more than an event. It's a rallying point for those who are passionate about biotech and standing up for science.
You know, Christian, the theme of this year's event, this year's Bio event, is stand up for science. Mm-hmm. Right now, if you look across the globe, and that is in Europe, you see it in Germany, we see it in London, we see it in Brussels, we see it in the United States. There is emerging this group of anti-elite, anti-science
really?
Groups that are building up anti-vaccine and science and scientists are not very good at organizing, pulling themselves together. And that's what BIO wants to do. We think that the collective power of the industry should be on display in Boston. And we certainly fully intend on doing that, signing people up for action and trying to get people to stand up for science. Matter of fact, we're going to have a booth. And I would love for you to go by and do this. It would be great to have a celebrity come and do this so that every Joe understands if you price fix these drugs, you are going to stop the cures of the future. We can't do it. That's why we need to stand up for science. And that's what we're going to be doing in Boston in June.
Rich, insights into the biotech industry and particularly the fight to protect innovation are a timely reminder of the role we all can play in supporting scientific progress. If you found value in today's episode, I encourage you to subscribe to my channel for more conversations with leading voices in biotech, entrepreneurship, and investing. Don't forget to share this episode with colleagues, friends, or anyone you think could benefit from these insights. Together, we can ensure that our collective voices stand up for science, fostering an environment where innovation can thrive. Thank you for listening, and I look forward to welcoming you back on the next episode.